Dewey's here at Groundswell this year, the 26th and 27th of June, close to London, UK. Many friends of the podcast will be there. John Kempf, Abby Rose, Benedict Boezel, Henry Dimbleby, Claire Hill, Russ Carrington, Andy Cato, Tim Coates, and many, many more. See you there. You're going to listen to a conversation with Aymeric and Joseph, working at Quadia Capital. If you're interested in how to invest in regenerative food and agriculture companies and some nerdy details, this is your interview. We're discussing how they found the sweet spot to get investors to invest in regenerative agriculture and food companies by offering them something which falls into their comfort zone, and how they have invested in over 15 companies and the reason they're using flexible loans. And what are flexible loans, actually? So enjoy. Welcome to another episode of Investing in Regenerative Agriculture, Investing as if the Planet Mattered, podcast show where I talk to the pioneers in the regenerative food and agriculture space to learn more on how to put our money to work to regenerate soil, people, local communities and ecosystems while making an appropriate and fair return. Why my focus on soil and regeneration? Because so many of the pressing issues we face today have their roots in how we treat our land, grow our food and what we eat. And it's time that we, as investors, big and small, and consumers, start paying much more attention to the dirt / soil underneath our feet. Before we get started, I've been recording these interviews next to my day job, and I will definitely continue to do so, and release about an episode a month. But at the same time, I would love to take this further, share more interviews. There are many more stories to share on investing in regenerative food and agriculture. More depth, improve the quality, maybe even doing some video series. So I started a Patreon community, which makes it easy to support creators like myself. If these podcasts have been of value to you, and if you have the means, I invite you to support me and make this happen. For more information, please find the link to my Patreon account in the description below. And now, without further ado, the interview. Enjoy! So welcome to Investing in Regenerative Agriculture, Investing as if the Planet Mattered. I'm Koeman Seyen, your host, and today I'm talking to Aymeric Jung and Joseph Segarra of Quadia Capital, an investment manager based in Geneva, Switzerland, who invested over 150 million into impact companies, projects and funds. Aymeric Jung joined Quadia to shape its food and agriculture investments. For example, setting up Noriterre, a financing program which supports entrepreneurs in the agri-food sector, demonstrating a clear alignment to the principles of organic and sustainable agriculture. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I'm going to ask Aymeric and Joseph everything there is to know about their investment strategy, their theory of change, their vision, and how they put money to work. Welcome, Aymeric and Joseph.
Hello. Thank
Hello.
You.
Hello. Morning.
Good morning.
So to start with a personal question to both of you, actually, and you can decide on your end who's going to answer it first. How did you end up in the space of food, agriculture, and soil?
So I can start, and just to let you know that before working at Quadia, I was working around 20 years on capital markets and the trading room, mainly on the structuring side. So it was really about looking for solutions. And in 2007, what happened, we had a crisis, food crisis, with pricing going up for all the food. And more private equity funds came to my desk, to my team, to structure solution about buying land and produce food, because it was clear that population growing, pricing going up, it was a key investment 10 years ago. And on my side, I just found out that having a quantitative solutions, which is just producing more food, is not sustainable, and it's a short-term view about a solution that we should implement. And step by step, still working at banking, I met a lot of people about agroecology, local food, regenerative agricultures, and I do think that's the solution. And I started to be passionate about quality instead of quantity, logistic instead of just a linear economy where you are producing and then you waste. And I started to think that we should bring investment to all these new entrepreneurs who are reinventing the food system. And that's what I'm doing now with Joseph at Quadia.
And in my case is a little bit different. So I started my career in impact investing based on the idea that something has to be changed and we don't have a lot of time. So I decided to start directly from university. So, and food and agriculture, of course, as a main theme in impact investing, is something that relates to myself as coming from Spain.
Thank you for that introduction. And so you both joined Quadia already with, in the case of Aymeric, with a lot of experience, and in the case of Joseph, with a lot of focus. How has been that journey of setting up that focus on food and agriculture within already impact-focused wealth manager? Why were they so keen on focusing on food and agri?
At Quadia, it was quite logical to go into this territory because at the beginning, the first Quadia partners worked on energy, like a lot of impact funds or impact companies, and looking for being more efficient and looking for companies on energy efficiency. And when you really look at what we need today and what's going on, a big waste of energy is in the food system. Just all the oil you can use and need for growing the food, then the logistic and transporting food from one place to all around the world, it's a big waste of energy. So it really made sense that the food and improving the food system will finally be the next step with the first investment in energy. And also because on impact, you know that with the food and the food market, which is more than 5.5 trillion worldwide, if you can change small things for the environment, for the social organization, you are really making an impact, and it's always a big change. As you have now, I think, more than 1.3 billion farmers worldwide, and just a very, very small part is doing modern agriculture. So it's on impact, it's huge how you can change things when you are doing it with a good intention and looking for quality instead of quantity.
And you didn't go straight, I mean, from banking to Quadia. You also co-founded Slow Money for the French-speaking countries. Can you explain a bit more what you were working on there and what your first discoveries or first journeys into sustainable food and agriculture and impact investing were like?
Yeah, of course. So after 2007, I lived 2008, and the banking I mentioned before, I was at Lehman Brothers, so it was really in London, at the trading room, at my desk, living the crisis, so it was not so easy, but...
Wow, you were in the first row.
Yeah, exactly, the famous Monday in September, but for me it was not really sad, finally, because for 1 year I was already interested by something else, so I had this passion about how to bring solutions, this time not just through derivatives or pricing, but really on the field with entrepreneurs. So still at banking for 3-4 years on my as an hobby, and during my holidays, I was meeting all these farmer producers, people trying to improve the food. And now it's more common than 10 years ago. Today, I think you can go to any meeting, dinner, opening a newspaper or TV, you have a lot of news about food and how food is poisoning us and the planet. 10 years ago, it was really less known by people. So what is interesting, so I started to do my first investment by myself, which were small investment, and step by step, bigger investment. And then I just heard about Slow Food, Slow Money, which is how to save and how to invest in the local food system. And it was a bridge with philanthropy and also impact investing. So this world, microfinance as well on emerging market, philanthropy, local food system, impact investing, you can really find the same people through foundations or on philanthropists. And that's how I started to do my first investment.
Oh, very, very exciting. And then you started at Quadia, and you came up with not only a strategy on private equity, so direct deals into companies, but also Noriter, which is a financing program. And is that different from a fund? Or can you explain a bit more where that program came from, and both of you, and what that actually is, so we can dive a bit deeper into that?
First, you have to know, and I do think you know this, when you are talking with people or classical investors or bankers about social and environmental finance or impact investing, you have this thought that it will not be liquid, it will be with a low return or just an emerging market with high risk and sometimes not really professional doing this kind of investment.
More as a hobby, yeah.
Yeah, 5 years ago, it was really the case each time you were talking about impact investing when it was not in green bonds or big energy infrastructures. You had this kind of ideas by people. So what we did with Noriter is just trying to find for an investor where is his comfort zone. And the comfort zone, it's not for investing too long and having a clear view on the potential return. So we built this program by bringing diversification for the investors. And the key was investing for 4 years, targeting a 4% annual return, and already some cash flow after 2 years and 3 years. So when you invest 100, the Noriter program is giving you back 25% after 2 years, 70% after 3 years, and full redemption after 4 years. So for a lot of investors, it made sense to have diversification, I would say, in real economy in their portfolio. And they knew that the return and the timeline of the return was really clear. So it's what we call the comfort zone of the investors, for them not thinking that it's too much risky at the beginning.
Yeah, which is very interesting because it touches upon a lot of response I've had in these podcasts that investors, but also fund managers, that those are the two main things are the high barriers to entry. So you need to bring quite a big investment to enter a lot of funds or into a lot of things, and that liquidity piece. Like, it's very unclear in many cases because it's such a long-term transition, the food system, when it's coming back. So tackling that one is absolutely key. And how are you doing that? How do you make sure that after 2 years or 4 years already most of the money, or after 4 years all of the money plus the return, came back?
So we're structuring it in a way that we are only investing in debt in this program. So we, more or less half of the portfolio, a little bit more, is allocated in direct loans to young companies normally, looking for working capital funding. So in growth phases, where of course the banks are an alternative, but they need sometimes quicker capital and also partners that understand the business and their needs in terms of network and where they are going at. And the rest of the portfolio is actually allocated to debt funds, which give this liquidity component too. And of course, the way we structure the loans and the repayments match the cash flows that we want to obtain and reimburse to investors. So the whole pack allows us to structure it in a way that capital repayment is possible from year two onwards. So it's roughly a 1 year period investment and over the 4 year horizon of the vehicle. And of course the most tangible part of this is the direct loans to entrepreneurs. But the funds give us an extra diversification, also geographical, because the direct loans we do mainly in Europe, and the funds give us this other component and allow us to be present along the value chain, which is also the objective of the Noriter program.
So I have a lot of follow-up questions on this. To start with the first one, was it easy to find funds, debt funds, that fit your strict criteria on impact and also on the liquidity level? I mean, I know a lot of investors and impact investors I work with are struggling to find them. Was that easy for you to allocate 50% of these vehicles to that?
It is not easy, of course. And you're very right saying that there's few, and there's when you are very strict in terms of impact and the kind of output that you want to see in such a strategy, your universe becomes very, very small. We already at Quadi have had for years a fund mandate that has enabled us to select pre-select three, four funds that then we can use in this kind of strategy, and we're very comfortable with what we have. The focus is medium-term loans, and also in working capital, working a lot with cooperatives, also in the trade finance space, pre-export mainly. So there's clearly a focus on the field, and that has to be demonstrated on years working in those countries and with a big footprint in different crops, etc. So, but it's true that there are not a lot of alternatives, and that was one of the and is still one of the challenges for ourselves and for many others.
Do you want to learn how to invest, or are you an entrepreneur and want to build companies in the regenerative food and agriculture space? Or do you work in big ag and big food and want to really move the needle? We have developed a new video course for you. Find out more on investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/course or in the show notes description below.
Now, we started with the first Moritaire at 50-50, so 50 direct investment, 50% through funds. Unfortunately, we dropped one or two funds because they are really struggling for performance, and all direct allocations are performing more. So the next Moritaire, it's more around two-thirds direct allocation and one-third through funds, still for a liquidity and diversification target, but on the performances, we really have the right network and the right partnership now for doing more and more direct investment.
Yeah, but that was going to be my next question. How do you find these type of direct loans, and how does it look like in practice? So you mentioned, and I've seen on the website, it's a flexible loan where you are basically aligned with the company, and I was wondering how that works in practice. And of course, if you have an example, you can go through how you found them and how that actually what that means for the company.
So first, for the deal flow, we have some partnership where we are offering co-financing. So they have their own deal flow. Could be funds, could be banks, could be asset managers. And we are doing co-financing. And this co-financing, it's mainly basic loans. Another specificity we have is we are doing index debt. And index debt means that you are not discussing an interest rate with the entrepreneur. What you explain is you just need a risk premium, and the entrepreneur must pay back the debt with this risk premium. For example, it could be 20% for 3 years or 3 years and a half, which is the maximum maturity we are doing for our 4 years program. And it just means that the entrepreneur is borrowing 100 at the beginning, and for 1 year there is no cash flow, so he can really grow his company. We don't need some cash back for the first year.
To really put the money to work. Yeah.
Yeah. And after, or sometimes just starting redemption to the bank or other partners and not Quadia. But after 1 year, every 6 months, he will pay back a percentage of his gross sales. So it means if the company is more successful than what we checked on the business plan, instead of 3 or 3.5 years, they will be able to redeem after 2 years, and it will be a high return for us. But it's a high return you are doing thanks to the company's success, not because you were negotiating at the beginning high interest rate. So by doing this way, a lot of entrepreneurs understand that perhaps the price of capital would be higher, but it's always cheaper than equity, but could be higher than just interest rate. But they are happy to share this because it's higher, because they are more successful.
And because I love these models, royalty-based, indexed, revenue-based, everything that aligns the investor with the entrepreneur instead of basically putting them on two different sides of the table and negotiating as tough as possible. What's the response from companies, as many are probably fixed to either doing debt very strictly or equity? What's their response normally when you come to the table and say there are many in-between options between those two tools?
That's a very good question, actually, because it is true that some companies, especially when they're young and they're starting the first years, they don't really consider debt as an option. we try to explain, and I think we've been successful, saying that it is indeed an option to complement an equity round or bank financing, for instance. And it's an intelligent way to put it too, because it's we are able to be more flexible than a bank and structure it in an intelligent way. So it has been very well adopted by entrepreneurs that we're working with. We've financed now more than 15 companies in the space, some of them younger, some of them more consolidated, but all of them with a clear objective of growing their business and with increasing working capital needs. So there is the sweet spot is there, if you wish. And of course, it is true that there's also a pricing issue that we have to overcome. There's bank alternatives, but entrepreneurs also appreciate a lot being in the Quadia network and being alongside somebody that even if he is invested in debt, is able to bring something different. And that's a clear value add, I think.
And in terms of the investors that you might be co-investing with or the banks that are, or the equity investors or the banks that are in the same round or helping the company at the same moment, how are they responding to these type of tools?
I would say very positively, because they see another actor coming into the table. Of course, it's complementary to a bank. It gives the sense that the company is going in the right direction, especially if the impact strategies is there and is clear. And from the banking perspective, it is too reassuring that another player is supporting the company. And from an equity investor perspective, it's of course non-dilutive. So there's also this attractive part of it, which we ourselves want to. It's also a way for us to screen companies to see how they advanced and why not consider an equity investment in the future.
So it's also a way to get to know the companies, work with them before you might consider a long-term equity investment. Yeah, of course.
And you know, we are bringing a network, we are bringing knowledge on the food sectors, partnership. We can find some partners for them on their value chain. So it's a lot of work on the field. It's not just the financing.
Yeah, you bring a lot more. You bring smart money to the table.
And impact. We are driving their impact. We are driving their value chain. And we are really looking at how they can improve their process to match our impact requirements.
Oh, extremely interesting. And then my final question on technical details, and then we zoom out a bit. For investors that invested in the vehicle in Noriterra, can they co-invest as well in individual deals? Or as I can imagine, it might be interesting. And I see some impact funds that are moving that direction or already offering, but not everyone. So I was wondering if that option exists here.
It's something we are starting this year. So we are doing, our deal flow is growing. And when we have higher investment, for example, 5 to 6 million in a company, we are doing club deals. So we are bringing money to the company. Could be a mix of equity and debt. And one part of this debt could be also with Noriterra program. We can share it. And as an example, the next investments we are doing, some people who started with us, I would say with average size investments through Noriterra program, now they are going into equity directly to new companies we are investing in. So it's also a learning curve for our investors, starting with Noriterra, their comfort zone, comfortable program, and now ready to go to more private equity deals because they are confident in our expertise and the companies we are bringing for investment.
And in terms of impact, which what you mentioned before, what are you measuring in terms of impact of Quadia direct deals, but also Noriterra?
We don't measure anymore. It's how we want.
So you used to do it.
Yeah, exactly. So we have our own methodology, but sharing this methodology with basic KPIs people can use. But before we had this QIM 1, which is Quadia Impact Measurement, and we changed it to Quadia Impact Management. It means now we want to be more and more active investors, even when we are doing a loan or debt, to the company. So it's not just about looking at the company and if the company is doing it well. It's really how we can manage the company or how we can bring ideas or action into the company to being better on the value chain, and mainly, I would say, with the circular economy approach. A lot of people can, and entrepreneurs could see sustainability like, you know, kind of regulations and not really business oriented. But when you are discussing about externalities and circular economy, entrepreneurs can really feel that it's an opportunity. It will bring more efficiency to the company. It will bring the company to be also more profitable. So more than measurement, what I try to explain is now we are working on impact with the company to show them that it will be better for their value chain and better also for the profitability. And for us, the impact will be linked to the success of the economy and of the company. If you are a small company, you are doing a great product, but with a good impact and you are not selling it, you don't have a big impact. If you can have a great product and selling it well, or product or services, then you are doing this impact. And that's how we put all our work now in what we will call the regenerative economy, because we do think it's too late for being just sustainable. We really need to rebuild with a bottom-up approach the economy we are looking for and the economy we like.
And what's a nice example you can talk about from the current vehicle that's active that really embodies this, also impact measurement to impact management, but also in terms of the loan, etc., and the loan approach? What's a nice example you would like to share?
I think a good example, for instance, in the Nourriter program, so in debt, is a company called Boussole in France, which is a network of socially minded bakeries along France. Started as a social project in the Économie sociale et solidaire, so a clear social approach, but with a business that makes sense, and a whole approach which is very, very interesting. So they're basically employing employees with difficulties in the market that are in risk of being excluded from the labor market. And they're putting them to work in bakeries doing organic bread, selling directly to big customers, so with volume customers, canteens, schools, residences, etc., that are able to bring a certain volume. They have been quite successful in different cities in France, and we've financed the opening of one of the network, the branches, and we're willing to do more because we see that the model is working, and their approach can further be improved in terms of the transport, for instance, to customers, passing to electric cars, etc. These are all things that we're already looking at with them. The production process is very important too. The sourcing of the raw materials in the production, the use of plastics. There is several points. The management of waste too, very important. They're trying to minimize that. So there, we see that we can very much have a holistic approach with them, and I would say it's a very nice example to what we try to do. Both in equity and debt, because this is, of course, an approach that we take with all companies in our portfolio.
And what are you busy with right now? We're talking February 2018. What's the main thing that's on your mind at this moment that you're busy with this week and today as well?
So we are increasing our Nourriter programs and on the same time, direct investment in companies. So now we have, for Q1, we are investing in 5 food companies, and 4 are in Europe. 1 is on emerging countries. So these companies, we can really bring funds to the company, what I just explained before, either directly or through our programs. So that's really how we can combine entrepreneurs' needs and what investors are looking for in terms of returns. We are really, I do think we are really a bridge able to make these two worlds matching and meeting and being both very happy of what they are doing. And what we explained in our last Norita report, it's an asset value, performance, a chart or diversification in a portfolio cannot express all, I would not say the gratitude, but really, yeah, the happiness of entrepreneur when they can work with some people, supporting them, understanding the business, trying to look at what is the second bounce of the ball, what is the business in 5 years, 10 years, how they will manage externalities, and not being just a fund or a bank expecting an exit or waiting for the debt coming back. So I would say we are working on a kind of growth for Quadia, more deals, more investment, but also without losing our priority, which is the quality of the business we are doing and the quality of the funding we bring to companies.
And is that something, because 5 years ago, and especially 10 years ago, when you first started looking at this space, have you seen a lot of change in terms of the entrepreneurs? I mean, you mentioned that there's a lot more focus on food, but do you see finally those two worlds of agriculture and food and impact investing, are they coming closer? Do you see any signs, not just in your daily work, but also outside that?
Yes, it's really big changes, because 10 years ago or even 5 years ago, it was considered by investors or also by politics or by people on economics or just, I would say, leaders, it will be considered like you can do some philanthropy, you can be an utopist or a dreamer on your side trying to do good food, good quality and good farming, but that's it. And the big money, the big investment is still maximizing the profit. And now, I do think more and more people understand that we have to build the futures we need and not just maximizing the profit. And it's just an example, but beginning of the year, having a letter from the CEO, BlackRock CEO Larry Fink, explaining that a company must have a social role where governments fail to really bring a better living conditions to a lot of people, I do think it's very strong. So as a summary, I would say 10 years ago, people didn't understand what I was doing, or they just thought that it was for being busy during the weekend. And now they can really understand it's a new economy we are building. And like internet 20 years ago, it was just a small part of the economy, but could be growing. And they want to be part of this economy.
And what do you see as the main barriers? Because I see a lot of signs as well. I saw the announcement of Danone last week, where one of their main line of credits is going to be the return they have to pay, or the cost they have to pay on that is going to be connected to their ESG performance. And that's not a small one, because it's $2 billion. So they're starting, even cost of capital is becoming less if you perform well on sustainability, which is very interesting. But what are the main barriers you think for, let's say there's a room full of impact investors who are very interested in food and agriculture, who have read the books about soil and about local communities, and they want to get into this, but they don't know where to start. What do you feel as an expert in this space as the two main barriers for this?
I think the two main barriers are first, you have to understand as a consumer, but also as a distributor, producer, that food is not a basic product. It's not like a smartphone or a TV or anything. It's about life, and it's about a cycle you need to protect or you need to regenerate. So it means it takes time. So I would say the two main barriers is understanding that the price and the cost is not everything, because we are talking about food and life. And the other barrier is being able to have a long-term view. You cannot just look at 1 year cycle or 6 month cycle. But the good thing is not yet, but where you can really have a good perspective on being optimistic, it's even if it looks more expensive, you have a way to arrange the price for having quality food not too expensive, just if you reduce your animal product consumption, for example. And the key for us is externalities. Once people would understand that someone has to pay for externalities, now you will not have any more barrier, because it will be very logical that people doing well with less damage, so less externalities, they will compete better and they will have more autonomy and resiliency on their value chain. So that's our bet for not having any more barrier. But now it's clear that long-term view, the time you need to spend and the first cost, it's the main issues for being mainstream.
And where would you, both of you actually, if a new impact investor or new to the space, where would you start? What would be your advice to get active in this space?
Two ways. Either you want really to start, I would say, in emerging countries. And you know, we cannot just be a happy consumer or happy investors because we are paying the fair trade. Fair trade is not enough. You really need to work on the value chain on these countries and to create jobs and to create autonomy to these countries. So could be a first approach. And the other approach is really about investing in the good companies in Europe, for example, doing the right product and just being sure that they can distribute the product and how they have to educate the consumers that the price is not everything. So by having the right communications with all the scientific studies we know now about very processed food or pesticide, you know, it's just a cycle. So you need to invest or you need to put your money where you will educate the consumer for traceability, for example, and on the same time where you will be able to support the producer for being sure they will keep going on doing the quality. And apparently it's what Danone is starting.
And I would add, we need to consume that product too, and start from the beginning, which is making sure that we understand the approach in terms of consumption and in terms of what we want us as consumers to have. And if we see more products of that type, we're of course going to see more investment too coming in.
And do you see, and this is really my final question, I always say that, but then I have five others. Do you see a role for us as consumers, and in that case, most of us aren't accredited investors and are retail investors. Do you see a role for the consumers and in not just, between brackets, being the consumer of the product, but also a more active role in the company? You see a lot of crowdfunding, crowd lending coming up. What's your medium to long-term vision on that?
Of course, that is, I think, key. So if financing actors see that crowdfunding in equity and in debt crowd lending makes sense and is working, which we already see, this is a big push in terms of what the customer is looking for and what he's able and willing to finance from a micro perspective. But it's a fantastic way to start. That is only a clear sign that more money needs to be put in the space. And it's a starting point also for more institutional investors to look at the area and really make a difference with more capital and more scalability, which they of course bring.
And would these royalty or indexed based loans, to me they seem perfect for crowd lending, but what do you think about that?
Yes, they are totally in line with an approach that you would see in crowd lending. We know several examples that kind of go towards that direction. I think it has to be made understandable for retail investors, let's say, and it has to be simple. It has to be also, it has to make sense for companies. They need to understand and feel that the mechanism works in terms of finding the right incentives etc. The timing is very important. We need to be with at maturities, at horizons that make sense, and not every company has the same kind of horizon. So, but that is clearly one approach that works for micro funding, let's say. And that is also it is also scalable as we've done it ourselves, and you're able to start from as small and come to a more critical size in the future.
Thank you so much for that. I want to thank you for your time and be conscious of it. So I'm going to end the conversation here. There's so much more to discuss, but we'll definitely check in again and see how the different versions of Noritera are going, how the different vehicles, and of course also on your equity investments. Thank you both, Emeric and Joseph, so much for your time this morning.
Thank you very much, Gwen.
You just listened to a conversation with Emeric and Joseph of Guardia, really getting their hands dirty by investing in real and growing regenerative food and agriculture businesses. I hope it was as interesting, relevant, and inspirational to you as it was to me. Thank you for making the time to listen to this podcast and making it all the way till the end. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
If you found the Investing in Regenerative Agriculture and Food podcast valuable, there are a few simple ways you can use to support it. Number one, rate and review the podcast on your podcast app. That's the best way for other listeners to find the podcast, and it only takes a few seconds. Number two, share this podcast on social media or email it to your friends and colleagues. Number three, if this podcast has been of value to you and if you have the means, please join my Patreon community to help grow this platform and allow me to take it further. You can find all the details on patreon.com/regenerativeagriculture or in the description below. Thank you so much and see you at the next podcast.